With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Wise Men Say podcast. We have lots to talk about tonight because of developments over the weekend. So going to get straight onto it, which is good because we were just going to talk about a rubbish 1-1 draw and then a preview against Burton. And we would probably have to try and milk some content out of that. So joining myself, Stephen Goldsmith and Gareth Barker tonight, we have Phil Smith from the Sunderland Echo. And it's a good time to get you on, Phil. Good old chat tonight.
I was really excited to get stuck into the 1-1 Fleetwood draw. I'm disappointed now.
Oh, the upcoming Burton game.
I know. I forgot about the game today.
That's disappointing.
Do you know what? I don't even know if we're at home or we're away.
We are at home.
Are we? Yeah, all right, yeah. Okay. Don't know what that says. You can get away with that. No, well, that's it. You can't go, so it's not like, you know. It's not like I need to plan my Tuesday night or anything. We'd be sitting in the house like every other night, watching it.
I'm in charge, Stephen. Did you not read the statement?
Well, I'd back you. I saw your Football Manager achievements with Forest Green, so it's a good CV. That I think might get you far.
I've been on the phone with my mate Steve Evans, taking some tips, talked him through the team. Looking forward to it.
I wonder if he's. Throwing his hat into the ring.
Didn't he? After that,
I'm sure it's firmly in the ring.
Didn't he say, was it like if Rotherham beat Leeds or something, he'd wear a sombrero for the post match press conference or something, or the post match interview? And he did the date and he came out wearing a sombrero. I haven't imagined that.
Yeah,
it rings a bell.
I think it rings a bell.
That
He said if they stay up, he'd come in his beachwear for the next game. That was it. Yeah.
Well, not quite the same, but close enough. Right, we're just going to fire loads of questions at you now, Phil, and assume you are in the know and you have an idea as to what is going on, because things have unravelled quite quickly in the last few days. Phil Parkinson obviously has been sacked. What was your initial opinion or your thoughts on that? Surprised at all or not?
Not surprised, no. I think for a few reasons. I think that I felt the mood just kind of around the place generally had shifted fairly considerably after the MK Dons game.
Yeah.
It's been quick, hasn't it?
It's been a quick dive.
It has. It's been quick, but pretty definitive. I think, kind of after that sort of Swindon game, we were debating about whether the team had enough in attack and all that. But there was a genuine, general sense of kind of, things were in reasonable order. And I think the Portsmouth game just seemed to change everything, really. And, that MK Dons game was a big one, I think, because not just the fact that they'd been beaten, but I think the fact that they were outplayed so poor. I sensed a big change in the mood around then, and I always looked at this little break as a potentially quite crucial moment because, I'll regret this when Sunderland takes 0 points, but we are looking at a slight change in the fixture list. It has got a little bit softer. Two home league games against struggling teams, Papa John's Trophy game next Tuesday. So in that sense, I wasn't surprised at all, and I kind of, after the Fleetwood game on Friday night, I was sort of on standby all weekend. The new bookcase was half assembled. But of course, the bit where we're all kind of in the dark a little bit and wondering where it fits into is the wider picture of the club, because as I say, while I wasn't surprised by the decision, generally trying to piece together where it fits in with this takeover or what have you is the very, very hard bit that I think we're all still trying to piece together.
Yeah,
to be fair.
We'll have a little chat about that. I mean, you've said that unraveled quite quickly, and I think you were right, Gareth, in what you commented on. I can't remember if it was in the group chat or on social media, that you tend to know that a manager knows he's done when they come out with strange things after the game that seems to have done it for them. Ironically, Poyet is the one we keep going back to after Bradford. But it's you know, when he started talking about the slope on the pitch and you know, and praising them, it was just, oh, that was what he said, wasn't it? He started banging that old drum about how fans expect to win 3 or 4-0 every week, and you just think it's not going to end well, and it's going to end soon. This,
yeah, I mean, 2 goals would be nice. You know, if we don't get, we don't score twice very often. It wasn't kind of with Parkinson. It wasn't out of sync with some of the stuff he generally says after games. When we've had results that, you know, aren't ideal, because he does say strange things at times. However, this was like an additional layer of stupidity in saying like the slope on the pitch and all this, and you know, it's just daft. I mean, why didn't we win the first half?
Has a Fleetwood slope ever been mentioned before? I've never heard of it.
It's
the famous Fleetwood slope.
It's near Hulsworth Cricket Club. That's all I'll say on it.
Well, never stopped us in Newcastle in recent years, did it? There's a massive slope at St James's Park, we never seem to have any bother there, kicking either end. So, I think it's just a load of rubbish, isn't it? I mean, you know, I just never thought they'd do it. I just think the whole, I've said before about it.
Yeah, you did stick your neck out on the line and say
yeah,
that, didn't
just
you?
I never thought, it just feels we're just in stasis. It just feels like going back to the appointment of Parkinson, and it just feels as though we've been on hold since then. And it hasn't been, it's been a lot less enjoyable supporting Sunderland in this last 13, 14 months. Longer, obviously, after the sort of how it ended with Jack Ross, which was a shame because, you know, I think he was undermined in that summer and didn't get what he needed. And I'm not excusing him because, you know, he didn't improve things from the season previously, like he needed to at the start of that season. And unfortunately, Phil Parkinson's come in with a remit of getting us promoted. And yeah, he was a bit unlucky last year with what happened, but ultimately we've gone backwards under him. You know, this is the worst football we've probably I've ever seen us play. You know, speaking to my dad about it yesterday, and he was saying after Parkinson was sacked, and he was like, he said it's the worst he's seen since he's been gone. And like, it's in the 60s.
It's interesting that, though, because, like, you know, we were sitting here after the Doncaster game, and that what was infuriating about that game was not the way we played. We thought we played really well in the first half, and we've put in a couple of decent quite strong performances this season. I think without getting the result we deserve. And I think what done for Parkinson, I mean, any Sunderland fan could have walked up to Parkinson with 20 minutes left against Fleetwood and said, if you don't make some subs, you are going to get sacked. You do know this, don't you? Like, he must have been the only person who thought he could just carry on down that path to just not make subs and keep throwing leads away and think that this wouldn't come back to haunt him. I mean, you've got to admire his stubbornness, Phil, I guess. His strong-mindedness.
Do you know what?
Cost him his job.
Something on a completely unrelated point about the five subs that never occurred was because we were sat right in front of right behind the Fleetwood subs on Friday night. I thought, I feel really sorry for the one lad who hasn't got on the pitch here. Because obviously Fleetwood used their five subs by about 70 minutes and there was just one lad sat in front of us. I thought, it's tough to take that. But yeah, no, it was. It was. Look, listen, I think that was the thing about the Fleetwood game, is that it was so similar, not to the same extent, just so similar to the Doncaster game the Friday before, where the first half was... I mean, I don't think they played as well as they did against Doncaster in the first half at Fleetwood, but they did okay. You know, the Fleetwood didn't hurt them. And then you expect the opposition to improve in the second half. They did. And they just didn't. There was just no response, no change-up. And that was just, you know, frustrating. And like you say, when you see Fleetwood bringing on two players, another two players, players of real, you know, game-changing ability as well. I think that was just a frustrating thing.
Where was Mark Duffy recently?
Sheffield United.
Was he at Sheffield United? He was, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the bench, honestly, like, and the salary cap thing, you know, it wasn't a comment I agreed with because for a lot of reasons, but, you know, Fleetwood bench is very strong. You know, you look at the players they're bringing on, there's hundreds of championship appearances between them. But, I think it was just what felt like you were watching the same game unfold that we'd watched a week previous. Everyone was watching it, weren't they?
The frustrating thing is...
Jack Ross had similar problems.
We just haven't played anybody, like... It doesn't feel like we're playing anybody good either, and that's the most annoying thing. It's like...
Portsmouth were good.
Yeah, but... You know, we've played, like, 13 games.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Like, considering we're supposed to play some of the teams that were fancied, it's not like we're saying we're a million miles away from these teams here. We look so comfortable the first few games. We look so much better than these teams. And that's what's frustrating for me for Parkinson, because I don't know. It's one of those you think, was he that far away and he's just stubbornness cost him in the end? Or were we picking up points despite him, I guess, would be an argument some people could make.
How far away can you be for such a long time, though? If that makes sense. We've always been just on the edge of doing what we need to do. Every time the opportunity comes, we make up that ground and then we've got an opportunity to get in the top three, top four, and we take two steps backwards again. And then, like, so it happened this week, it would have happened this week, so we'll play Burton, play Wigan, we'll beat them, we'll be like fifth or sixth or something. And then the opportunity will present itself to get into that top three, and then we'd chuck it away and the other teams would win and gain that ground back again. And it just seemed to be in this pattern where we just can't break into that, and we haven't been able to do it since we've been down here. I think the first season was just because the quality of the league was much better than it was last season, certainly a lot better than this season. And that group was the best group we've had, and I feel as though that team in this league with that setup, we would be comfortable. But, you know, as the league's deteriorated, we've deteriorated alongside it. Unfortunately, we haven't put our stamp on it.
We haven't. Who made the decision to sack him, Phil? That is a question for you.
That's a good question. Oh, listen, I think it is something that interests me a lot and interests me moving forward. It was Jim Rodwell who informed him of the decision. Jim Rodwell's been the...
Did he form him or did he Zoom chat him?
I can't give you... I'm not sure about that level of detail. That's a good point, actually. Yeah. I think it is an interesting one because, you know, Rodwell has clearly been the most influential figure at the club recently, over recent months. And, we've talked a bit about on this podcast about the changes in the summer, Paul Reed's departure and things like that. And, you know, Jim Rodwell, very much the architect of that. But it's very, honestly, it's very difficult to piece together who is going to be making this next decision. And it's going to tell us a hell of a lot about where the football club's going next. It is going to be very interesting.
Well, yeah, and you're saying it'll tell us a lot about where the football club's going next. I mean, so many things to unpick and try and get your head around about what's happening behind the scenes now. Mm-hmm. Who's calling the shots here? Who's calling the shots there? Do you understand that they still want to press ahead with this decision to bring in a sporting director, a stroke director of football?
Yeah, I've not heard anything to suggest that isn't the case. But, I, you know, the the remit of a sporting director or a director of football can obviously vary hugely, and in terms of the level of influence they have. I don't know whether they plan to make that appointment before a manager or not. And that's obviously going to be very revealing in itself, isn't it? Because theoretically, a sporting director should be in charge of dictating the style of play, recruitment that goes right through the club from first team to, you know, junior levels. So it would seem very strange to me to appoint a manager and then appoint a sporting director off the back of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm glad you said that, because I was starting to wonder if I was just going crazy. How it just all the talk seemed to be suggesting that we're going to appoint a manager very soon, when there isn't this sporting director stroke director of football in place anywhere. Like you said, somebody who comes in, you know, to just remind people what that role would be. And this is somebody who carries the strategy of the club forward. So, you know, how everything links with the academy, what the transfer policy is, what kind of scout you have, where they go, it all pieces together. The manager is just supposed to be another piece of the jigsaw that fits into the overall strategy by whoever this is. So, like you've said there, you can't appoint a manager before you appoint a director of football, surely.
No, I don't think so. That makes no sense to me. I mean, you know, and as I alluded to before, sometimes the scope of these roles can be slightly different. Sometimes you'll have a director of football who, generally speaking, is just in charge of, you know, scouting and that side of things. But certainly, a sporting director, generally speaking, you get a sporting director at a club where you essentially split the football and the business sides, and your sporting director is essentially leading the football side of the club. As you mentioned, that has absolutely huge implications. Boiling down to the academy, all the way through recruitment. And I think it is going to be a really interesting few weeks, because, you know, anyone who's read my stuff over the last couple of weeks will know what I thought about the performances on the pitch and things that need to change and what have you. But, you know, I'm not going to be a hypocrite here either. And when Jack Ross was sacked just over a year ago, you know, I said the structure of the football club is nowhere near where it needs to be, And they might get lucky in appointing a brilliant manager who can work miracles, but more often than not, we're going to be stuck in this cycle unless the structure improves. And 12 months on, I really don't think it has, to be honest. And, you know, the manager is only one very small part of the conversation that needs to happen about where Sunderland goes next. And it will be interesting to see how things progress, because, like you say, it would seem to me very strange to appoint a manager and then appoint a separate sporting director. But who knows?
I think it's very. I think this is where the concerns, you know, some people have accused us in particular recently of being negative for the sake of it, moaning about things. Someone I read described the podcast as cancer, which is nice, isn't it? It's just some people talking about football with different opinions. And you're like, well, where have you been for the last 2.5 years? Like, switch on. It's all right to ask a question, like, about the current situation. Like, look what happened in 2018, right? And learn from it.
Yeah.
If we don't have to, like, every time someone swings into town with a sack of money with a dollar sign on, we don't have to start doing cartwheels down the street because they've got it. Let's have a look inside the bag first and make sure there's actually something in there, you know, because we've done this once and we need to learn from that. And yet I know there'll be arguments about if Louis Dreyfus does take a 60% stake in the club, that's a slightly different thing. If it's a 40-40 split with him and Sartori, then you've got Sartori with 40 and Donald and Methven with 20, which gives them essentially control of the football club. So it's a bit of a strange one, but until it comes out in the wash, we don't know. And obviously, you know, if given what came out over the weekend with, you know, obviously we've talked about the texts before, some of them appeared briefly for people to see. And, you know, that's the kind of person who's around.
Which had absolutely nothing to do with us.
Nothing to do with us, no. Yeah, nothing to do with us. But, you can see, you know, that's the kind of person he is. And if he's still involved, I think it's right for people to start asking questions now. Don't wait until it's too late. Don't wait until it's happened and don't say, oh, well, you know, or well, they're going to it'll jeopardise a takeover if, like, you criticise Charlie Methven. No, it won't. Like, and if it did, then you don't want them in charge anyway. Like, who runs a business around?
They've not been doing doing the research. If that's the case,
exactly.
This is what a lot of people are asking, Phil. And you know, nobody wants this to work out more than me and more than us as a collective. It's ridiculous to suggest otherwise. I don't think you can blame fans after what happened 2 years ago when we were just, you know, and some more than others, but we all to an extent bought into what these guys were doing. Listen to the promises that have turned out to be empty promises and give them our full support. Of course, if these people are still going to be involved in your football club, you're going to ask some questions and you're going to do a little bit digging, and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And it does just, the main question that the people who think like this has, I guess, Phil, is if the current owners were so desperate to leave, and reference the thought that they acknowledge that they had outstayed their welcome, mm-hmm. and, you know, they use those terms, not us. You know, they brought that terminology to the table. Why do they want to still be around, and why does a potential new owner still want them around? Those are the questions.
You don't want me to try and answer them,
do you? I want you to give me the bloody answer for this, Phil. I'm expecting you to know. You're going to shed some light on this whole thing.
Yeah, I think that from the conversations I've had, and it does seem to me that Stuart is very much intending to take a step entirely back. You know, sleeping partner is the phrase that you hear. Now, why you would then still keep a 15% stake in the club, I'll leave other people to kind of speculate on. I'm sure we can all think of a few reasons why that might be the case. But, you know, Gareth's made a really good point there. No comment. I think Gareth's made a really good point there in terms of, you know, when I say that the next few weeks are going to tell us a huge amount about the club, you know, we will learn a lot from these little details that we don't know yet. Is Louis Dreyfus going to have a majority shareholding on his own? Who's he bringing in with him? You know, who's he going to put on the board? These are all vital questions, and it is anyone who's coming into the club is coming into a club where if they show there is a vision, a strategy, investment, and I don't mean throw money at players, I mean generally investing in the club growing over a long period of time, they will be welcomed hugely. And anyone worth their salt will take scepticism from fans and fans asking questions and wanting to hold them accountable. And they should see that as healthy, and no one should want to hide away from that. So I think that, you know, there's still a lot I don't know about it. There's still a lot we don't know about it, but it's only right to ask questions, because, you know, the current regime have been in charge for 2.5 years and the club has not progressed, end of. And so it's only fair. Well, yeah, that's totally fair. And so it's only right to ask questions and have I honestly see it as healthy. It's a healthy caution. It's a healthy scepticism. And, you know, anyone who wants to buy the club who has a genuine desire to progress it shouldn't fear that, because they would be welcomed and they would be given a huge amount of support. And we saw that the last time when the owners had seats changed for them, when they had people setting League One attendance records when they were asked to, and all sorts. So it's going to be a big few weeks, and, you know, it is going to be very interesting to see how things shake down in terms of, you know, percentages and who actually, you know, commands it. It's going to be very interesting.
I mean, who does the speaking as well? Yeah. That's, you know, that these little decisions as well. So you know, if this goes through, who tells us about it? Who's putting their name on it? So who's coming out? And now I wouldn't expect them to go down the same route they did last time and go on podcasts and the like, and nor do I think they should do that, frankly. But it would be interesting to know. So if there are plans going forward, whose plans are there, and you know, who's calling the shots, and who's the public face of this, is going to be interesting, isn't it?
But the interesting early indications are a lot of people are making the assumption, and it's a logical assumption to make, that the decision to sack Phil Parkinson has been made with the fact that the takeover is going to happen in the next few days. Or whatever, but we've heard that before, and we've seen before somebody like Mark Campbell come to the table and have an influence in a pre-season that happened. So, you know, he's having discussions with Jack Ross about which players he's going to bring in. He hasn't even, you know, he hasn't got a pot to piss in. But he's, like, managed to, like, somehow get to a situation where he's having some sort of control and sort of influence on the football side of things, because he may or may not turn up, take over the football club. So this is something that's happened before. These are patterns that, if it all comes off and it's great, then great. But it, and we've talked before about, you know, making the same mistakes just on a different scale, and we've done that again the last 2.5 years, rather than learning from what we've done in the past, you know, at the football club. And a lot of talk about learning from that, those mistakes, we just made the same ones over and over again anyway, but just in League One instead of the Premier League. And that, you know, this week, looking at it, if they still haven't interviewed finally and appointed a sporting director, for example, and they still haven't narrowed down the manager that they want, then it says to me, you know, like you said, who's making these decisions? It says to me that they're not sure themselves fully what they're doing. You know, do you want to get on the discussion about managers now? Moving on from that, I mean, obviously, there's the odds and the bookmakers, whatever, suggesting there's probably 2 front runners and Peterby, Danny Cowley, yeah, and, we'll, Gus Poyet.
Yeah, should we do that? should we have a quick break and then we'll come back and spend the last 10-15 on just talking about who might come in, because, you know, I'm sick of all the talk about how things are being run at the minute, because it's just a bit of a mess, and, you know, maybe they're saying it isn't a mess and we wait for them to present something to us, and maybe I'll hold my tongue a little bit until that happens. So we'll take a little break now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We are recording this today on Cyber Monday, which is quite a new marketing thing, relatively new. Does somebody want to explain what Cyber Monday is for people who don't know?
This is literally the first time I have ever heard the phrase Cyber Monday.
Really? So,
yeah. It's Black Friday, but on a Monday. And Black Friday now lasts for 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just an extension.
It's going to end up like the DFS sale, isn't it, in about 20 years' time. It's just every day is going to be Cyber Saturday or... You know, save money Sunday.
There used to be a shop in the town, and this, I'm showing my age here, and you will only remember this if you're in your 30s minimum. The Officers Club, remember that? In the Bridges. Yeah. And that was a 70% sale, but it was permanently 70% sale. The signs were every single day, all year, every day, all year round. Anyway, Cyber Monday is an extension of Black Friday, and From the Terraces are offering 25% off their items, so ignore the WOMS10 discount code. You're not gonna increase your percentage, unfortunately. But it is a good time to go and check them out.
Yeah, go to fromtheterraces.co.uk, yeah, and you'll get 25% off your basket today. How exciting! Which is quite exciting, to be fair. It's very exciting.
It's very exciting for me. I didn't even know this was a thing. So. There you go. That's quite.
Yeah, well, there you go. You get straight on it when you get off this. When you get off this pod, straight off it, straight onto fromtheterraces.co.uk. Yeah. Just go mad. Go mad for Christmas.
My dull Mondays become Cyber Monday.
Yeah, Stephen's making up a bottle for his child. He doesn't know. He's taking his earphones off, so he doesn't know. But see, he's a modern man. He's a podcaster and father. He's one child away from becoming a full Chris Coleman.
That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
But you never know.
Keep going. I can multitask.
What a beautiful moment that we've just captured on the podcast there. But yeah, just goes to show we've all got lives as well. While we're spewing bile and hate on this podcast in order to turn everyone against whoever's in charge of the football club. Shall we carry on, Stephen, or are you just going to continue?
We'll carry on with the manager. The manager situation.
Talking about managers.
You touched on it before.
It looks as though the two in question, or the two at the top of the list, it's Danny Cowley, who was at obviously Lincoln, very successful spell at Lincoln, and then he went on to Huddersfield, and obviously didn't work out quite right for him there, but it looks like a bit of a strange situation. And on the other hand, you've got, some might argue, as a romantic return of Gus Poyet, even though, as we touched on earlier, it didn't exactly end well, but it rarely does it, for a football manager, especially at Sunderland. So,
interestingly, if those two are the two main candidates, and a lot of people are suggesting that they are chalk and cheese, Phil, aren't they, in terms of how they like to play football?
Well, this is getting back to what's kind of underpinning this whole podcast, right? Is, you know, they are two very, very different decisions. So it seems very, very strange to me that one person would, you know, have those two candidates. I mean, what I would say is that I do think the net is being cast a little bit wider than that. I'm not saying that one of those two isn't going to get the job. They may well do. And certainly, you know, both of them have admirers at the club. But I do think the nest has been cast a little wider than that. But yeah, they're two, you know, as you allude to, they're two hugely contrasting styles, two hugely contrasting managers. And we're used to that at Sunderland, where you look at a managerial shortlist and you think, I'm not entirely sure what the brief is here, or, you know, what they're trying to achieve here. But yeah, it's very interesting. I think both of them, I think, to be fair, are fairly strong candidates. I mean, I know Gareth alluded to there that it didn't really work out for Danny Cowley at Huddersfield, but, you know, it was a slightly odd one. He did keep them up last year, and I think Huddersfield were probably in a fairly similar situation in the Championship last year to when Sunderland were, you know, in terms of the fact that they'd come down, lost so many games, and that kind of rot had set in. So I do think it was a bit of an achievement to keep them up, to be honest, and it does sound like it was more about, his departure was more about control behind the scenes over recruitment and what have you, and not seeing eye to eye with the chairman, so to speak. So I think, yeah, I wouldn't get too, I'm not reading too much into his time at Huddersfield, actually. And Gus, yeah, I mean, what do you take from Gus? Do you take the cup run, or do you take being losing 4-0 to Tim Sherwood? I don't know.
8-0 at Southampton.
I'd forgotten about that one entirely. I'd forgotten about that.
At least that one was
funny, though, with Virginia and that. Do you know what I mean? At least there was a bit of comedy value to that one. I mean, Sherwood, though, come on.
Well,
4-0 down at half time.
I mean,
Seriously,
and
though,
and losing to a third division team in the FA Cup.
Wasn't Sherwood in charge of Spurs when they beat us 5-1 as well?
Yes,
I think he was, actually, right.
May I get Sherwood in? That, look, he knows how to put a team together. He knows how to put a team together.
Did he have an excellent spell? For people who don't know, Phil,
Danny Cowley's name gets mentioned a lot when people discuss potential new managers, and you can understand why. They've built up a good reputation in the lower leagues. Did you know? Was a back to back promotion? Did you say with Lincoln?
With Lincoln,
So, and young, and seen to be young and progressive. Actually, he's quite direct and pragmatic, isn't he? I think it's fair to say his style of play might not be what some people think it is.
No, if there's any perception that it's tiki-taka, it's certainly not. I mean, I think, again, certainly at Huddersfield, I think you'd have to say that he had a job, which was to keep a losing team in the league, and that lends itself to a certain style, I think. But yeah, certainly his Lincoln team, I don't think they were afraid to mix it up at all. I think he very much played with a lot of width, liked to get the ball in the box. I don't think they were afraid about that at all. So yeah, it's if the perception is that it's, you know, it's Gus-esque possession based football, I certainly don't think that's the case. But I don't know. I mean, you guys will be able to answer this question a lot better than me. Is the issue being direct or is it a lack of intent? Because his Lincoln side did score an awful lot of goals along the way. Do you know what I mean? So it wasn't all passing football necessarily, but they were aggressive. They were attacking, and they scored a lot of goals. So it's I don't know how see, fans would view that.
You know, until you see it in action, because Sam Allardyce came with this reputation that he was going to just have disgusting football to watch, and it was difficult the first month or two while he got his players used to how he wanted. But by the end, that was all right, and that was quite attacking football. And I don't think Sunderland fans mind getting the ball up the pitch quicker as long as there's no. But there's different ways of looking at it. So, like we said, Allardyce did it in a way that was okay to watch. I mean, the players help. Parkinson, when he first came in, didn't do it in a way that was good to watch. That was difficult to watch before he changed his ways. So,
I think
that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
In terms of style, I just think
you do feel like there's a big job in him somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's in terms of style. You just got to. Do you do it passively or do you do it aggressively? And that's where the problems lie. No matter what you do, if it's a passive approach to whatever system or style of play you want, it's going to irritate. So if you're not getting up and, you know, getting into people's faces and, you know, trying to, you know, put your foot on the throat, like we talked about at home plenty of times last season, you know, we didn't put our foot on their throat enough, and you know it was just very frustrating at times where we just let teams do whatever they want, and it's very frustrating. And that's whoever comes in, that's the last thing I want to see. Like, you know, people just coming in, like being allowed to do whatever they want, and us letting them do things. You know, we should be able to, you know, assert some authority on the game and be aggressive.
Yeah, we know what Poyet's about in terms of his style of football. That's a really interesting one with Gus, but I've got fond memories of Gus. I really did like Gus when he was our manager. And whether that's just been because we were in a lucky position where we used to speak to him a lot, and maybe I'm letting, you know, that side of it cloud my judgment a little bit. But like you said, Phil, it's, do you look at the cup final run? It's hard to ignore that, and that way we were playing football towards the end of that season. And even the way we started the next season, we just think, you know, that game against Hull after we beat Newcastle away when we had two Stonewall penalties turned down, we ended up losing, and things seemed to unravel from there, didn't they? But they unravelled quite quickly, as they tend to for Sunderland managers.
Yeah, it's interesting because the tables kind of turn on that one, because, you know, that period, obviously you guys knew Gus kind of in a professional sense. That was just pure being a fan for me in those days, and I loved the time. I absolutely loved it. I looked forward to watching the team. I liked the way he carried himself. You know, I loved the passion he had. It was, you know, I do remember that time really fondly. And, you know, the players, good Premier League players, seemed to rate him as a coach. You know, his record at this level is good. You know, he did superbly with Brighton. So, yeah, it's a really interesting one, mind you. I think it would be lively, because he wasn't afraid to say what he thought about the setup when Sunderland were in the Premier League. So,
yeah, which, of course, involved sporting director, and he wasn't happy about it, was he?
And he certainly hasn't mellowed in the years since, it's fair to say. So, so yeah, that side of things would be quite lively and interesting for me, I would imagine, in my current role. But I do, like I said there about, do you remember the cup run or the Aston Villa game? I mean, I do have fond memories of that time, to be fair.
I mean, we talked about
me too.
During the lockdown, we did the lads did the few season review pods, and the 13-14 season was one of those seasons, and I think we came to the conclusion afterwards, or, you know, that was probably the favourite season we had since we got promoted in that, you know, within that last 10-year stint in the Premier League. That was probably the funnest season that we had.
from January, the second half of that season, from January onwards.
Yeah,
when form picked up. We had a dip after the League Cup final, didn't we?
Yeah, I think it's like you say, Stephen. I liked Poyet, and I liked his, like, all the points Phil's touched on there is, you know, he gives you a lot. He's very, he likes to talk about football, and he's passionate about football, and he's lively, and he's alive. You know, you can see that it's in his eyes. You know, when you see the post match and that, how much he was bothered about it. You know, some of the managers I've had since have been quite insipid in that regard, and I don't think that's, like we've seen a bit with Phil Parkinson, it's just very, like, bland. And I know it's not just about that, but you've got to try and reinvigorate people, you've got to try and make people believe in what you're doing, and I think Poyet could do that, and I think he could win people back very quickly. But I do have doubts about it.
You'd turn on the charm straight away.
Well, of course you would, but like I just have that doubt about it. Like, I think if it happened, I'd be happy about it if it happened in some ways, but it doesn't feel like a good idea. You know what I mean? It's like one of them. It just feels like a bad idea. But if it happened, I'd probably be a bit excited about it. But it's stupid. It's not based on any logic or rationality. It's just, that's football.
I was going to say, is it just based on because you're saying you should never go back and stuff like that?
I don't know.
It's something that people throw around a lot.
No, I just because the style of football, when it worked, he got us going. It was great at times, but do we need slow build up now when our problem is we're playing in front of people too much? Is he going to come and play the same way? Is that what people are going to respond to if we don't win enough games initially? Are people going to be like, oh, well, this is just like turgid, boring, sideways passing football, we're not penetrating enough, and the same problems that we've had in the park?
That's what it'll be because it's whether he's got the players up front.
Yeah.
Because there was never a plan B really with Gus, was there?
No.
You know, not really. His downfall was because he couldn't find a way to get Jermaine Defoe in the team. And we all said that.
Yeah.
You know, we all said that. And then I mean, Dick Advocaat did to a degree and Sam Allardyce did fully. But that was the one thing. So
Jordi Gomez on the wing against QPR. Never forget.
I'm Tom the two. I'll do like the idea just because I like him so much, and I do think that maybe because he's starting from the bottom, he would be able to build something. He's not expected to scramble around in the Premier League like he was, but it's that relationship with the sporting director, Phil, again, isn't it? Because he didn't like that, and he's not having it. What if they said,
you're our preferred choice, and he said, right, because remember, these people haven't been employed yet, right? So if he said, right, I'll take the job if you don't employ a sporting director, what do you think they'd do? Do you think they'd say, all right, or do you think they'd go, no, sorry, this is a plan, and it's going to be somebody else? What do you think? What do you think they'd do?
I think they should do the second one. I don't know. I don't know. It's hard not to be cynical. Do you think, part of me thinks they think Poyet will be a good choice because he'll get the fans off their back, frankly, for a bit, because fans will be happy with that appointment. And, you know, like Gav says, would they sacrifice this whole new model if somebody like Gus Poyet was going to ask of it? It's a big call, isn't it?
If he brings back Virginie, I'm fully on board. that is my stance. That is my editorial stance. If it's him and Virginie, then, yeah, I'm all for it. Nah, it would be pretty alarming if they did abandon the model. But as I say,
it would be very alarming.
But I don't know if that's the case, and that's what we're still trying to piece together, isn't it? Well, it depends who's making the decisions, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm just having a look. I'm just looking to see where Santiago Virginie is now. I don't know if he's retired. How old is he? He's 32.
While Gareth's doing that, we'll have to fill.
He's 32.
Is that all he is?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that all he is? I thought he was about 29 when he played for us.
He signed a 3-year contract at San Lorenzo in 2019. And according to Wikipedia, he's played 3 games for San Lorenzo since 2019. So
that would be amazing. Do you know what? He could play as one of 3 centre halves and bring
the ball. He could, yeah.
He would be great.
Agree. Oh, yeah, I'm sold. Nah, well done. Thanks, Phil. Yeah, I'm in.
Imagine him just stepping out from the left, playing those little balls into Denver Hume. Oh, my word. I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Bring him home.
It'd be interesting to see how quickly we get some news. I didn't even know we should bother with the Burton game. Do people have any strong... It's going to be somebody who's unemployed, I mean, isn't it? They're not going to be paying anybody compensation, you wouldn't have thought. So, Paul Cook, I know the lads discussed on the sort of reaction pod that they put out last night, is a strong choice. I would be relatively happy with Paul Cook, I think. I think he's done a good job at this level, wherever he's been. Like Gareth, I'm kind of romanticising about the idea of Poyet and let my heart rule my head a little bit, because, again, like Gareth says, it's... I'm just not sure if it's a good... I'm not sure there's much long-termism in it. And with Cowley, I'm not sure, I'll be honest. Does anybody have a preference out of either those three or somebody to the left field?
I think, like, it's a bit of a cop-out of an answer, but I think, like, it's kind of what we're getting back to. I think certainly, for me, Cowley and Poyet would both be quite strong candidates, but in their own way. And what I would really like is, when the appointment happens, is for someone from the club to be able to come out and explain how it fits into what the club's going to do over the next 2 to 3 years. That's what I want. And I want to be able to then look at that and say, oh, okay, that makes sense to me, because if this is what you're trying to do and these are the people you're bringing in, that manager makes sense and I can understand how it can work. And then maybe when they go, whenever that is, you can go for this person because it's a logical progression, and we don't go through this thing where we change it all over again.
It's sound logic, Phil, and that needs to happen, because we've mentioned before, again, that, you know, we saw Charlie be very vocal about Jack Ross and his time here on Sunderland Till I Die on season 2, and then he's went and appointed a manager who was even more cautious than him. So, you know, there needs to be thought behind this recruitment, and there needs to be an explanation behind it as well. Gareth, do you have a choice?
I think at the moment I'm very much on the fence. However, if I'd had like 2 or 3 beers, I'd be going Poyet. I would. That's what would happen. That's because it's like it's the inhibitions. It's your inhibitions. You know, it's you don't. You kind of you know it's a bad idea, but like we've had like a lot of like just crap for ages, and maybe it would be something that would. I mean, maybe I could completely misread the situation, and you know, after this, you could go online and see loads of people saying, like, you know, Poyet wouldn't lift the mood; it would be a bad appointment. I think those two would probably interest me more than Phil Parkinson remained as manager. And if those two were available when Phil Parkinson got the job, I would have been more interested in one of those two getting the job than him.
Well, I'll have to see what happens. I think Poyet's liked. When I rang my dad yesterday and filled him in on the news, he said he likes Poyet and he would be happy about that. So,
well, that's...
That's just an insight into one person who doesn't do so really do social media and stuff like that. I know the club pay way too much.
Poyet. I suppose when I spoke to my dad today, he said
this is the older generation speaking.
He said he played some nice football.
The club obsessed far too much over social media, don't they? And there's a whole new generation who'll probably back up what you're thinking anyway. Right, well, it'll be interesting because this is going to move really quickly. I don't think, you know, very, very quickly is anything to discuss ahead of the Burton game. There's nothing, no idea what this guy's sort of... It's his first coaching job, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he's only really worked under Parkinson in terms of being a coach. So we've got no idea what his philosophy is or what he's going to do. But you wouldn't imagine he's going to try anything you know, he's not going to get the job, so you wouldn't imagine he's going to try anything too drastic, would you?
No, I would imagine the setup would pretty much be the same, you know, as what we're used to. Which, to be fair as well, you know, do you rip something up entirely 2 days before a game? To be fair, whether you agree with it or not, I'm not sure that would be sensible anyway. But as you say, it's his first coaching job. He was brought in by Phil Parkinson. I would be surprised if, you know, we saw anything different. And that, you know, Burton are a struggling side, that we should still expect that to be enough.
We could turn it into a reality TV show, the appointment
Burton,
of the manager.
Burton and Fleet.
So we get, like, there's a stream for the game tomorrow night, and it's going to be sent to either Cowley or Poyet to decide who gets the job. I mean, like, film them sitting, like, waiting to see if they've got, if they're going to receive the link. We can call it the link. There you go. And then when it comes in, they'll know if they've got the job. So when it ticks past, like, 7:45 and they haven't been given the link, they'll know that they haven't been successful. So there you go. I think it'll be a pretty short-lived series. It would be very specific to tomorrow night. And that would be it.
Be good. It'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see what decision comes first, I think. Whether we hear, you know, who the new sporting director is first, or whether they go for the manager first. I think that's a really, really interesting thing that might tell us a lot about how stable things are.
I thought you meant whether they'd bring Poirier or Virginie back first. How good would that be if they brought Virginie back and announced him? And then, like, built it up to Poirier coming back. Oh, that'd be so good.
What could happen is that they appoint the sporting director, and then he signs Virginie and Bridcut, obviously. and then Gus is like, actually,
and Buckley, what's Will Buckley doing?
Buckley's a free agent. Will Buckley's a free agent. I'm sure he is, or at least he was.
Yeah, he can remain free.
Remember some of these terrible signings, because it's ironic because that's you know. He hated the fact that somebody was doing the transfer stuff for him, but by far the biggest criticism of Poyet was his transfer business. He made some shockers. We're still paying for one of them, aren't we?
I don't think that was entirely his still fault in mind, but
still in court, one of them, yeah.
Yeah.
He couldn't get him in the team. With Alvarez, he couldn't get him in. He couldn't find a way to play him. Like, he just couldn't get him in the team.
Yeah. No, you're right.
He came on in the QBR game at half-time, didn't he? And, like, played quite well. And I think a lot then that was, like, before he had the old meltdown.
Yeah, it was interesting. And that was a good meltdown. I was there for that one, just open-mouthed as he was saying it. I wonder if I've still got it on one of my phones somewhere. Right, anyway, let's see what happens over the next couple of days. And yeah, at least there's something happen. At least there's something to talk about and almost feel positive about. But we're going to still keep asking questions. I'm sorry if you don't like that, but is what it is, as the kids say. Right, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.